This is HPR episode 2706 entitled, Why I Love the IBM S/400 Computer Systems. It is hosted by Arun Patton and is about 29 minutes long and carries an explicit flag. The summary is, a short talk about how I came to love the IBM S/400 systems and why.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello folks, Kay Wisher here to remind you that it's that time of year again. Time for the Hacker Public Radio New Year's Eve show. For those who don't know, on New Year's Eve, December 31st, 2018, at 10 a.m. UTC, that is 5 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, we will have a recording going on the HPR Mumble server for anyone to come on and say Happy New Year and talk about whatever they want. We will leave the recording going until January 1st, 2019, 12 a.m. UTC, that will be 7 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, or until the conversation stops. Please visit hackerpublicradio.org to find all the details and links about how to set up the PC Mumble client, your favorite mobile app, the mobile server connection details, our Etherpad show notes, and the live audio stream if you only prefer to listen in on the lively banter. So please stop in and say hi, and maybe join in the conversation with other HPR listeners and contributors. It's always a good time.
Well, hello and welcome at another episode or another podcast by me, your humble servant, of course. Well, my name is, let's start with the intro and then I'll tell you, this is going all wrong, but it's spontaneous, but it's prepared at the same time. But, you know, put me before a microphone and I start rambling. But, I'm trying, so bear with me. This is a talk about the AS400 system, the IBM AS400 system, or systems, or family of systems, or whatever you like. So that's the main topic for this talk, but let me give you a small introduction about myself. My name is, I'm Dutch, so my name pronounced in Dutch would be Jeroen Baten. And I know that sounds awful if you're not Dutch. Jerome Batten was just as well. Anyway, I'm a nerd. I'm a geek. I'm 55 by the time that you hear this. I'm self-employed. I'm into Linux. I'm into Python programming language. I'm into programming in general. I've been a sysadmin for years. I like geek stuff. I like mainframes. Emulated or not, but if they're not emulated, it's the real deal, and there's a reason why they call them big iron, so it's a hefty challenge. And then there's the AS400s, of course. So first, what is an AS400? Well, the AS400 is the family of systems from IBM that they call mid-range. And mid-range means, of course, in the middle of some range, and I think the best way to explain this is at the low end of the computing range is what we call a PC, you know, a personal computer. Even if they are the top of the line with multiprocessors, a gazillion RAM, etc., in in terms of range, computing range, it's still at the low end. Then you get the middle range, which is in IBM parlance at least, the AS400. And then there's the high end, and the high end is what we would call a mainframe. So a mainframe is a lot of computing power, mainly focused on bringing you the highest throughput for your data. So throughput means getting as much data from A to Z in as little time as possible. So that's high end. So AS400 would then be mid-range. And between a mainframe and a high-end PC, there's still an awful lot of space in between. And that's filled with, well, the AS400. But it's not, well, the AS400 is a family of systems. So even within the AS400, you have the low-end systems, which are comparable to a PC, I guess. And then there's the high end, and the high end is big boxes with lots of memory, lots of processing power, lots of throughput. And it's still not a mainframe yet, but it's getting close, at least at the time they were popular. So it's a range of systems, and it's a family of systems, and you have them from very small up to very big. I met the AS400 while I was working at a large chemical plant in the south of the Netherlands. If you're Dutch or near the Dutch border, or you know a little bit about our country, you know what I'm talking about and the organization I'm talking about. But let's leave it at that. Anyway, they had an AS400 model E45, and I knew nothing about it. I was much younger, of course, because this was back in 1993 or abouts. So I'm now 55, so you do the math. I was a lot younger at least, and I knew a few operating systems, if you could call them that. I knew about MS-DOS, I knew about Atari, I knew about simple basic PCs. I knew about, I even knew a little bit about Novell NetWare for the server operating system for PC networks. I knew Windows for workgroups. And then I met this huge system, which was a AS400 model E45. Today, its specs would be very unimpressive, but at that time it was a big system and a lot of people were working on it. So they did their enterprise resource planning on that system, and they bought some software package and even had people working full time building customizations. And it seemed everybody was happy. But it was completely different from what I've seen before. I mean, there was a menu system once you got logged in. There was a command line, so you could enter commands. There was no mouse, and everything was different. But although it was different, it was nice at the same time. So nice that I recently started an AS400 museum. But more on that subject later in this talk. The AS400 was the code, well, when it was developed, the code name of that project was Silver Lake. It was named for the lake in downtown Rochester, Minnesota, where development of the system took place. And the AS400, as such, as a real product, saw the light of day in 1988. I even have a nice t-shirt with the text AS400 running the Matrix since 1988, because of all those nice phosphor green letters that you see popping up on your screen. Anyway, the AS400 itself was the successor to the System 38 that started 10 years earlier in 1978. That system at that time was a little revolutionary, and it had three major concepts. Even today, there are some strange concepts in there. So, for instance, it used single-level storage. So to the user, there's no difference between what's in memory and what's on disk. It just works. You enter a command, it just works. Of course, everything is stored on disk. But to the user, the disk is far and away. You don't touch a disk. You don't do. You can change into a library, but you don't change into a directory as such. It's just, well, there's a library on the system that you go into, and it's somewhere on the storage. It had an integrated operating system. It had security built in, but it also had a relational database set in. So there were software development tools. You could very easily make a database, query the database, design screen forms to enter data or display data from your database, whatever you like. It had communication tools, etc., etc. And the other thing, it was built with a hardware-independent machine interface. It was using a hardware abstraction layer, the HAL, H-A-L. And everywhere in the IBM documentation about AS/400, you read about the HAL, the hardware abstraction layer. And what it does is, there is sort of the operating system is divided into two layers. So the first layer is a hardware-specific layer. So that's, of course, hardware-dependent. And that's the HAL itself, because at the at the other side of the HAL, it would present an abstracted system image to the operating system on top of that. So all the operating system tools, menus, whatever, are written and compiled to some form of abstract pseudo code that would be then executed by the hardware abstraction layer. It's similar to Java. Yeah, you know, you have this you program a language, it's compiled into Java bytecode, and there is actually not really a system that can run Java bytecode, so you need a virtual machine. But Java appeared in 1993, so that's about 5-6 years after the AS/400, and even 26 years after the System 38, which already had a hardware abstraction layer. So clearly they were earlier with that kind of thinking. Well, because of the complexity of the System 38 that appeared in 1978, there appeared a simpler version, System 34, and a version with a nice menu system called System 36. Now, clearly the successor to System 36 and System 38 could be System 40. But no, they had to do something else, so they called it AS/400 for Advanced System 400 instead of System 40. So it was the direct successor to the System 36. So single-level storage, integrated database, a security model, and a menu system, and the OS on top of the HAL. Now, at first, the hardware was 48 bits, based with a CISC processor. So that's Complex Instruction Set Computing, CISC. IBM changed the hardware in the 90s to 64 bits RISC based systems, and RISC stands for Reduced Instruction Set Computing. And because of the HAL, application migration to the new hardware was for all the users very simple, because IBM itself converted the HAL layer from CISC to RISC, but everything above that level, all the operating system tools, all the applications, everything just kept on working. Migration was a breeze. Somewhere in 2000, in the year 2000, IBM changed the OS/400 name to E-Server I-Series. I know I can't even pronounce it, but I'm not native English, but I think that even English people have trouble saying this. What they did, they made everything was an enterprise server, so that would be E-Server, and then you had the I-Series for integrated, and you had the X-Series for X64, 68 bits, and you had, well, the P for performance, the P-Series. But anyway, so the AS/400 changed to the E-Server I-Series as part of IBM's systems branding initiative. And in 2006, that was again renamed to System I. Now, I know you're probably a little dazzled by all these different names, so let's call it what it is. It's still, in my heart, it's still an AS/400 system, no matter what any marketing drone or no matter what any company representative will tell me. In April 2008, IBM announced, and this was nice, its integration with the System P platform. So you had System I, which was the successor to the eServer I series, which was the successor to the AS400. Only a name, you know, the hardware was separate, of course, also new, but anyway. And the System P would be the AIX platform, so the IBM Unix operating system. And in April 2008, they announced that they would integrate both hardware families into one platform. And the unified product line is called IBM Power Systems and features support for the IBM I and IBM I. This is the kicker. IBM I was previously known as i5/OS or OS400. So it's... They've been changing the name, and it, maybe it's hip or whatever, or some marketing floozy had to come up with a new abbreviation. I don't know. Anyway, so the IBM Power Systems featured support for the IBM I, also for AIX and the GNU Linux operating systems. And this is all very nice and dandy, of course. The operating system itself is object-based. So everything in there is an object. And like I said, the features include an RDBMS, a relational database management system. And that one is called DB2/400. So it's a sort of a slimmed down version of DB2. Maybe it's not slimmed down. I have no clue because I'm not a DBA. I just know that it's an integrated database. And if you need a database or you need to create a table, it's just there in the menu system. It's so easy. Anyway, there's a menu-driven interface. There's support for multiple users. It's got block-oriented terminal support. And that's the IBM 5250 terminal protocol. And you can, of course, print stuff to printers. Recent operating system versions can also run web-based applications, yay, which can be executed inside the optional IBM WebSphere application server. For people who are still using that and haven't migrated to JBoss yet, or you can even do PHP/MySQL applications inside a native port of the Apache web server. So, well, they're pretty much up to date, which is it's cool. There's a lot of software there, and a lot of fun stuff to use. So, unlike the everything is a file a mantra of Unix and its derivatives, on IBM I, everything is just an object with built-in persistence and garbage collection. And it offers Unix-like file directories if you really need them using the integrated file system. It's got Java compatibility implemented through a native port of the Java virtual machine. It's all there. The everything, the PHP is there, ported, of course. MySQL is there, ported. Ruby is there today. There's a lot. Well, and like IBM mainframe operating system, IBM I uses apkdic as the inherent encoding. So it's not ASCII or UTF-8, it's the EBCDIC, EPDIC, character encoding. That has a long history and comes from IBM mainframe systems. With the introduction of OS 400 release 4, IBM introduced what's called LPARs, logical partitions. And logical partitions, usually we think of partition as being a segment on a hard disk, but in this case it allows just multiple systems to run on a single piece of hardware. So the system is just you can divide the system using software and say, okay, I want on my physical system I want two or three completely separated computer systems, so much memory and so much processing power and so much hard disk to the one system, and so much memory and processing power and hard disk to the other system. So logical partitions, and you can even run different operating systems within those partitions. Well, how does an AS400 work? Well, let's start at the very beginning, and starting an AS400 takes a while. it has to read the file system. It has to construct some system tables in memory, and this takes some time. During IPL, and that stands for initial program load, you see a lot of status codes appear on one after the other on the front panel of the system. All in all, about some, I've counted them on the table, 94 different codes. So let's give some example. If it would say C600 4006, it would mean IPL all the system buses. If it would mean C600 4007, it would say start the SLID. It could mean initialize context management, initialize components of the syslog, initialize the MISR, but even as something as trivial as set time of day. In the end, you'll see a logon screen appear on the terminal. Now, all communication is screen-oriented and not character-oriented. Like I said before, it uses the 5250 protocol and not the 3270 protocol for IBM mainframes. Having said that, it's still screen-oriented. It's just another type of terminal. And no doubt, there was a huge potential for a new type of terminal in the market at that time. I don't know. The administrator account, which on Windows would be administrator and on a Unix system would be root, on an AS400 system, it's called a QSEC offer. Or, in other words, it starts with a Q, SECOFR, or for some reason, everything on an AS400 starts with a Q. I don't know why. But the SEC offer stands for security officers. That much is clear. And default, that profile can do everything, unless, of course, you limit its credentials. But in normally, default, the QSEC offer user can do everything on the system. If you've been successful in logging on, there is a menu where you can choose options, like option 1 for user tasks, option 2 for office tasks, etc., etc., and even option 90 to log off. And if you choose option 1, you get a submenu with new options. If you would select 2 for office task, you would get an office task menu presented, so you can walk around the system if you're not familiar with it. At the bottom of the screen is a list of function keys you can use. Things like F3, and it's the same as in the mainframe, so F3 is to exit your menu or go back to the one before. F4 would be for the command prompt, F9 to retrieve last command, etc., etc. Well, besides using the menu, you can jump around in the system using commands. And this is where it also is very nice, because these commands are abbreviated strings. For instance, to display a user profile, the command would be display user profile. Duh, that's very simple. But you would abbreviate it as short as possible, and then it becomes DSP for display, USR for user, and PRF for profile. Now, that's to display a user profile. If you want to work with a user profile, it would be work user profile, and then the what I just was a DSP for display would become WRK for work. And then, of course, after the WRK, the USR and the PRF. If you want to display the system status, it's, of course, well, what do you think? Yeah, you're right. It's DSP, SYS, STS. And you would get a screen presented that would show you the system status. Now, on to the operation of the system itself, because the operation of the system is not like what you may be familiar with. It's job-oriented. So, when you start a program, you submit a job to the system. And that means that the job enters into a job queue, and then the job queue feeds into a subsystem. There can be multiple subsystems with different processor priorities as well as memory limitations. And that means that there is an awful amount of tuning options available, so the system can be very complex in its workings. And, well, you should know what you do as a sysadmin, but you know, default out of the box, it just runs nicely. So, but there's you can add subsystems, you can add job queues, and you can tweak tuning parameters to your heart's content. The AS400 is renowned for its stability. There are many urban legends of an AS400 simply put behind a brick wall in error. You know, there's just somebody comes in and says, oh, I need to put a wall here. Yeah, you just put a wall there. And people completely forgot that there was a computer behind that wall. But no matter what, it just kept on running for years. So at some point, they had to relocate the office. And it's like, okay, why is the network not down? Well, there's still a server running somewhere in this building. And they find it somewhere cemented in behind a brick wall. So it's very stable. It's got gazillion of possibilities what you can do with it. But at the same time, it's also a very hacker unfriendly platform. So, for instance, yes, it uses SCSI disks, but if the disk identification string does not contain the word AS400, the system will not accept it, which, of course, leads to ridiculous pricing. Hence, me saying that it's a hacker-unfriendly platform. At this time, and this is a personal note, at this time, I consider this to be a dying breed of computers. I'm sorry. I that's just the way I think it is. There are many happy users and organizations, and it did have a great time, but at a great performance system, but at a steep price. So maybe you can replace one big AS400 system with 30 or 40 run-of-the-mill Intel servers to get the same throughput. But hardware, repair, sysadmin, and development knowledge can be found anywhere. And that's not quite the same with an AS400 system. So I think it's dying. It will take a few more years. You know, it's sort of a dying slope that will take years and years. But then I guess the last user will someday stop using it. Well, because of my admiration for this hardware and software family, I started a museum called www.as400museum.org. That's www.as400museum.org. So sorry for the small commercial there. It's just, well, you know, it's an initiative and I hope people like it. There's no, I'm not into it for the profit. I mean, I just called it a dying platform. So who am I kidding? And the thing is, at first I had acquired two old AS400 systems, but then a friend of mine who has been working AS400 since it appeared on the market in 1988, he donated a huge pile of stuff to me. Currently, I have not two, but I have four, be it relatively small, but still AS400 systems. But I also now have hundreds of CD-ROMs with OS software and a pile of original drives to play around with, tapes. I even have computer tapes with the actual original AS400 release 1.0. Yeah, talking about museum stuff, right? I have several 5250 TwinX terminals for demonstration purposes. It's not a lot, and they will die in the end. So if you have some laying around, I'd be more than happy to take them off your hands. And of course, that goes for all the AS400 stuff that you have in your vicinity. In October of 2018, I was one of the exhibitors at the Berlin Vintage Computer Festival, the vcfb.de. And in April 2019, I will also make an appearance at the Vintage Computer Festival in Munich, the vcfe.org. So there's a kick in. So it's not in Berlin, it's the vcfb.de. Watch the top level domain name. And in Munich, it is the vcfe.org for the E for European and org, of course, well, organization. And well, maybe I see you there. I mean, I think that vintage computer festivals will increase in size and frequency simply because there is at this time, how shall I put this? It's like a few years ago, it was history in the making, but now it's history. So there's something to show, and people interested in historical stuff and in old computer systems. And how did things work at that time? For instance, how did a Cray supercomputer be? How was it that it was so damn quick at that time? It's so much quicker than everything else. I know by now, but because somebody explained it to me, I didn't know before. But it's there's so much to learn and to be amazed about. So no doubt there will be more Vintage Computer Festivals in the near future. And luckily, if I'm lucky, I'll try to attend them and show people what an Ace 400 system is. Because it's I was there with one system and two terminals, and you see people walking up to you and you're thinking, oh, that's a box. And it's black, it's probably a PC, but why are there two screens and there's no mouse? So you have to explain that it's a server system, and you can have two terminals or you can have 500 and it still would run. Well, all my bucks, probably 500 would be a little overkill, but well, you get the point. When I announced this recent initiative, you know, the www.as400museum.org, on Twitter, I got a nice response from Henry Sprock. Thank you, Henry. And don't worry, I know it's an alias. But anyway, he was asking if I was going to be, if this was going to be my next talk at Ochkamp in Sheffield, UK. Well, all I can say is, who knows? Maybe they got me making podcasts, so I might just as well return the favor and show up just one more time and enjoy some English beers and some really nice talk with friendly people. So, I don't know. Well, there's just that tiny thing called Brexit, but we'll see what happens there. So, all I can say, who knows? Anyway, I invite you all to read more about this adventure at www.as400museum.org. And with that, I would like to sign off and say till we meet again. It was nice talking to you. I hope you like this. And I'm going to sign off and start thinking about what my next top podcast should be about. So if you have comments, ideas, things you would like me to talk about, just mention them in the comments below this podcast. And, well, who knows? Maybe your idea is a winner. Sorry, no pricing or prices involved, just the honor of being the one presented with the idea. Okay, bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HBR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution ShareAlike 3.0 license.